Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $700 on average, and those savings add up. Imagine what you could buy in the future.
Remember how 15 years ago I switched to Progressive? Well, I used all those savings to buy that golf club that swings for you. But now everyone who plays golf is really good because, you know, the club swings for you. In the future, which is now.
So switch to Progressive and save big because those savings can add up in the future. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National annual average insurance savings by new customer surveyed who saved with Progressive in 2020. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Hello, welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Hour today. We are here with myself, Jason Rasnick, and my distinguished partner here, Elliot Lane. How are you?
I'm well, Jason. How are you? Happy Thursday to you.
Happy Thursday to you. I had a little bit of a crazy July 4th weekend. I did my first year where I did a real fireworks show, like real fireworks. Like I had music that I just played on speakers. And it was quite interesting.
Your first fireworks show ever, or just like one, your first one doing yourself?
First one that I did, that I actually had fireworks that like went pow in the air. Like went.
Not just the driveway, like shh.
Yes, I like posted on my Instagram, but like crazy fireworks. And I'm now like a firework fan. I want to buy fireworks all year. So I'm ready for next year or bring them to the next Benzinga Cannabis event or something like that in like an outside show.
If you all don't know, Jason pulls some incredible stops out. We have had a literal circus people at our FinTech Awards last year. It was great. And you did that last minute. So to say that I would not expect fireworks from you would be a lie. So,
yeah, we even had those late. I mean, we were supposed to have for the lasers, the lights, we had a laser show come for it, you know, for the FinTech Awards at the last minute. I know there needs to be like I'm gonna create a website, Last Minute Jason. And Nicole Point would love that. Lastminutejason.com. Or I just put it's a good, if you want things last minute, you just go to lastminute.com. I love it.
I love it. So are fireworks it's legal to have like the fireworks in Michigan?
Yeah, I think they changed the law 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and it's legal. If you go to my Instagram, you'll see I lit them up. I mean, Patrick Lane actually dropped off some fireworks on his way up north, and they were good too. So it was just a good little bit of July 4th. I'm excited for
always has a stash. He always has a stash of big old fireworks back there. He's got two daughters, and he's like, listen, having a bad day. I'm going to shoot off some fireworks, build him a tree house, you know, just do what normal dads do, right?
Yeah, I think he's scared of the fireworks, and he's dropped. He like buys him to like pretend that like he's like tough to Ashley, but then when he, you know, has him, he's like, oh, I can't use them. I'm gonna give them to someone else. I think he's scared. My wife's scared too, by the way. Like she like freaks out. Yeah. She like, I don't know what happened, but she's definitely scared of fireworks. Anything to do with like matches or lighters, can't have her on her.
Patrick can't escape cannabis hour even when he's on vacation. He's not able to. But welcome to Jason Hour. Cannabis Hour. In case you all didn't know, there are three people named Jason in this hour of cannabis. It'll be pretty obvious who is who, but we're just going to call Jason Raznick the Silver Fox, as Patrick has so aptly named him, and go from there. But Jason, what's new with you, man? Anything pressing that you want to share with everybody?
We're doing a lot more on the cannabis directory. I think it's cannabis.benzinga.com. Our team is hard at work on it. There was a lot of data that was slow when you had to do searching. So they had to do, a lot of extra coding. It's taken about another 3 weeks. It took 3 weeks. I think by the end of this weekend, it'll be very usable. And you'll see some stuff where companies can get their name out, and kind of like a Crunchbase where you can look at the companies, what, you know, dispensaries they own, investors. I do want to give a call out to Harry Barish. Thanks for sharing the BZ Cannabis Hour right now. I saw you just post. But back to the directory thing. If you have questions on this directory, I think it's just directory@benzinga.com or events@benzinga.com. Use those email addresses and we can help you get your profile, your Twitter, your stores, whatever you want the public to know about. We receive about 6 million to 7 million people that come to Benzinga a month. And if we can get 100,000 to 1 million to go to the directory to find these companies, learn more about them, their investment, the investments that they're trying to raise money in, we think it could be good. And so we're going to curate it. And the first part was just building in the data field. So that's been taking some time. What about you? I know you have the deal rooms coming up. Give us an update on some of the stuff that you are pounding along.
You know, it's a busy time. I'm sure, you know, we've discussed it over the past few cannabis hours, but we have adjusted very quickly. And props to you, Nicole and Patrick, in terms of, you know, really digging in and figuring out how to move forward, especially the events that we put on. But for anybody who doesn't know, we have a monthly deal room series, super unique and efficient way for companies to get in front of equity and debt investors. We have one coming up on July 22nd. So if you are either one of those types of investors, please don't hesitate to reach out to myself, Patrick or Jason, ElliottLane@benzinga.com. We'd love
Elliott Lane, ElliottLiot. I didn't add the extra T yesterday, but I do have to think about your name a lot when I write it, because I want to sometimes add the extra T. Is Elliott, what is the most common way to spell Elliott?
It's regional, my brother. It's regional. So, like, you go to New York, my name is spelled right across the board. You go to Starbucks, Elliott, ElliottLiot. Kentucky and anybody south of that, I'm shocked if I don't get that extra T. What really gets me are the people who go ElliottT. I'm like, you're from Mars. Like, where are you getting that spelling from? I've never met any Elliott that spells their name with one L and two T's.
But you're from Kentucky, so why don't you have the two T's then?
You're gonna have to ask my mom. I think she wanted me to be a little bit different. I think if you look at Matthew, Patrick, my two older brothers, Matt, Pat, and then L. Like, you know, I think she was just feeling something a little bit different for the third one, and obviously she perfected the formula. So, you know, we. We move forward there, but
and one more thing. So we were testing out a writer editor, and I said, okay, send us 10 headlines for Benzinga. And the first headline they had was they had Warren Buffett in the headline, and they spelled the last name wrong. Warren Buffett is the most commonly misspelled name. I saw it on Fox News or CNN even last week. Everyone wants to spell Warren Buffett's last name with one T.
Like Buffett.
Oh, yes, exactly. And so for anyone listening, I want to help you on this one, because it's the most commonly misspelled and it is my pet peeve. So if you ever want to prank me, spell that wrong. And I, like, for some reason, I get so fired up. I don't know what's wrong with me. I need to talk to a therapist about that. But the truth is, this, and the, actually, the guy, Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cavs, told me this. The way to remember Warren Buffett, he has an extra T because he has a lot of extra billions. So you had to put an extra T on the last name. It's a way to, so you don't ever forget it, because it's like, it's sometimes hard to, like, you know, think about that. So it was a good way. It has an extra T because he has extra billions. People don't forget it. But literally, this editor was doing like a writing test and they spelled Buffett's last name wrong, and or she did. And I was like, it's my number one thing. I even, for when I'm hiring, I ask who's the Oracle of Omaha, like if it's a writing thing, and be careful with your answer. If they do one T, then I just like move on. I don't, you know, they say, be careful with your answer. It's a weed out mechanism.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're going to have to come back to that. We need a survey to see, A, who spells his name right, and B, well, I don't know how you do that without telling them how his name's spelled. Anyway, okay. Longer conversation tangent that I want to go on there, but we have an incredible lineup here today. It's really a powerhouse lineup that Raz and the team
Power Hour Cannabis, BZ Cannabis Hour. This is a big one. Like you said, all these Jasons. And I think the first guest, you want to introduce him?
Yes, sir. I'm excited for this one. Jason White. White, everybody. Jason White. Not Jason Raznick. Not Jason Wild. Jason White. He is the CMO, the Chief Marketing Officer of Curaleaf. Curaleaf, if you're not aware, I'm sure probably doesn't even need to be said, but is on track to become the first, if not the first, the first nationally recognized cannabis brand. I mean, they are doing some incredible things, and it's really exciting that we get to have him here because, you know, I think the CMO, they're front lines. You know, they are the ones that really make this industry go, and whenever I see a successful cannabis brand, I see a successful CMO. So, you know, for me, I'm very, very interested to hearing Jason's thoughts. He should be on with us in a minute, but, you know, until he gets here, Jason, do you want to go through their ticker, or do you want to say anything about Curaleaf before he gets in?
Sure. I mean, Curaleaf, you guys, so I don't know if you're familiar with Curaleaf. It is the symbol, if you want to look it up in your, you know, on your Benzinga website, quotes.benzinga.com, the symbol C-U-R-L-F, so C-U-R-L-F. It's traded around 563 right now. 52-week highs, 254, 843. It's one of these cannabis companies that has been in the space, knows what they're doing. It has had a nice 3-month run down from it was around $4, and it's at 563. Great company. It's, you know, it's making acquisitions, and I think there's a lot of more meat to the story that's going to be coming soon to it. But you know, it's been around. It's not brand new. It has a bunch of dispensaries. I think close to 57 dispensaries. I could be off. Maybe Jason will update me on that one.
They need to do better. We need more.
Yeah.
Jason, what's going on, man? Mr. White, how are you doing today, sir? Not to cut you off, Mr. Raznick. We're going to come back to this.
Mr. White's way better than Mr. Raznick. So cut me off all day for Mr. White. I'm for that.
Yeah. How are you guys? Happy to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you, man. We're good. We're good. This is my first time hosting with Jason Raznick, so
okay.
Forgive the obvious hate we have for each other here. I have a lot of respect for Jason Raznick, but Jason, we want to hear about you, man. I want to hear about Curaleaf. I want to hear how you came. I really want to hear about, you know, your background and how you came to be in cannabis.
Sure, sure. Well, I've been with Curaleaf for 4 months now. And that was basically on a result of the acquisition of the Select brand. So I spent the first year of my time in the cannabis industry from last February to this February with Select as the chief marketing officer. And when the Select brand was bought by Curaleaf, I stepped into the role of chief marketing officer for the Curaleaf company overall. And I think you said it best. I mean, we're hoping to be to build the first national brands and give consumers a choice that they recognize no matter what legal state you walk into, you know our products and you know what we can provide for you as a consumer.
And how exciting is that? Like nationally.
You don't get to do that too many times in your career. You know,
like you're building something that it's not only going to be probably the first, you know, of its kind, you're building I mean, I don't even know how else to say how to top that. You know, building the first cannabis fully national brand probably will expand even further than that. So how did you get to be in cannabis? You know, I know you've had a long track record of marketing, right?
Yeah, you know, I was I actually started as an ad guy. I as a little kid loved Nike advertising, and I wanted to make Nike ads. And fortunately, that actually ended up happening, believe it or not. I started my career at Saatchi & Saatchi, spent about 5 years there just learning packaged goods marketing. I worked on Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, just kind of learning the basics. Then went on to work on M&M Mars at BBDO, and then landed at Wieden & Kennedy. And I spent the next 10 years between Portland, Oregon and Shanghai, China at Wieden & Kennedy. So I spent about 6 of those 10 years living in China. We opened up the Shanghai office. We helped Nike get ready for the Beijing Olympics and, you know, really kind of develop the term Just Do It in China, give it real meaning. And then I went on to run that office. And while running that office, Beats by Dre was a client of mine, and then ended up leaving China, moving to LA, joining Beats by Dre, spent about 5 years there. And then one day I felt like there was another opportunity for me out in the world somewhere. I felt like I had learned from legends, you know, Jimmy Iovine, Dr. Dre, Dan Wieden. And I thought, you know, I kind of want to go see what I'm made of. And, you know, there was just an opportunity to join the Select brand. They were just on this meteoric rise. And it was a business that was really ready to move from being an incredible product to start thinking about being a really, really incredible brand. And it was a well-led company, and you know, they were very open to wanting real marketing and sort of really turning that engine on. And additionally, they were really open to addressing social justice. And that was, for me, was very, very important. You know, I've always been involved in the diversity and inclusion space. It's something that's very important to me. And when I looked at the cannabis space, I felt like, wow, what a great creative opportunity. But at the same time, I couldn't go into that space without also knowing that there are wrongs from the past that we need to right.
Amen.
That's like that the story, like all the stuff you've done in the past leads you to where you are today. I just want to go back to the past. Like, two questions. Did you say you're at Mars too, or no?
I was at BBDO, and M&M Mars was my client. So I worked on the Mars brand for about 18 months.
Got it. And then one more question. You worked, you know, under like Jimmy Iovine, that group, for a bit?
I did, for 5 years, yeah.
Wow, so did you like learn a lot from Iovine? Like,
I think that's putting it lightly. Yeah, I think what I learned most from Jimmy was really, he really understood the kind of the art of the deal. He understood what everyone wanted, and he understood how to come up with solutions that made everyone happy, that got everyone what they wanted, but more importantly, moved the agenda forward. And, you know, he also surrounded himself with incredible people. You know, I got to train under phenomenal leaders like Luke Wood and Omar Johnson. And, you know, it was the teamwork that he promoted that was actually one of the most impressive things to me. You know, the day I got there, they always said, "We're a band. All right, everybody has an instrument, okay? And sometimes you get a solo, sometimes you don't." And but you know, we work better when the band plays together.
I love that. And I was always just amazed by, not only did you get Dre, but you get Eminem and then 50 Cent, and like how there's enough equity to go around and get everyone to come onto this label. And I always just wondered how that, like Paul Rosenberg, how they made that all happen. And that just to me seems like amazing. And you were right there. And I'm sure this is, like, for Curaleaf's purposes, one of the best trainings you possibly have.
Yeah, well, you know, I say all the time, like, some of the things I learned from Beats, I apply it every day to cannabis. And you know, starting with the fact that, you know, Beats was, at the time I was the global head of marketing, it was truly, truly global. I mean, what we were doing in the UK was different from what we were doing in France, was different from what we're doing in Japan or China and Australia. But it all came from the same idea, the same heart, and you communicated around the same products. And what I found in cannabis is it's the same thing. Like, there is no national marketing in cannabis. It's a lot more like global marketing. Each one of these states is a different country. There's different compliance, different products, different consumers, that, you know, at various stages of understanding of the plant. Like, it's way more like global marketing than it is like national marketing.
Got it. Yeah. And so Curaleaf, like, where are you guys at? Like, I was seeing at 57 dispensers. I don't know if that number is right, et cetera.
Well, I think the number today, that number is right, I believe. we've always got stuff in the hopper. We're in 17 states, 57 dispensaries. As you may or may not know, we have a deal with Grassroots that's hoping to close very shortly. And that will kind of bump all of those numbers up. And, you know, we're very, very prominent on the East Coast, but we go as far west as Oregon. And, you know, it's such a diverse landscape, you know, from what we've got the West Coast adult use markets. Then you've got markets like Arizona and Nevada, Arizona being that kind of medicinal, and then the East Coast, where, you know, it's really still a very deep medical heritage, and one where, you know, we make sure we are providing great service and great products for our patients and making sure we're there for them every day as an essential service.
And keeping that in mind, Jason, you know, I've read, you know, in terms of this is, we're in the business of wellness, right? The cannabis industry is improving people's lives. So when you think of marketing in the cannabis industry that you're improving people's lives, yes, there's a recreational aspect to it, but how does that change your perspective from Beats, you know, from Mars, from these past experiences you've had?
You know, I've always worked with or for mission-driven companies. You know, Nike says, you know, it's to provide inspiration and innovation to every athlete. And if you have a body, you're an athlete. So, you know, even in some of those spaces, I've always found the leader that has a real bigger mission and bigger purpose. And I think with Curaleaf, it's the exact same thing. I mean, we are mission driven. We say the word improve lives in our mission statement. And I think for me, it's actually, that's made it very comfortable and something that I was very accustomed to. But when you're in the space where you're actually, you know, medically improving lives, it's just a whole nother level of importance, a whole nother level of seriousness that you have to play, you know, that you have to pay attention to and really acknowledge in product development and understanding consumer needs and understanding the need states and understanding, you know, just for example, with COVID, like how do we stay open? How do we make sure people still get their medicine? So in that respect, it's a whole nother level of accountability. But I think at its core, that mission is something that I've been fortunate enough to be a part of the companies, but Curaleaf, we live it every day.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself, man. That's incredible. So, you know, I'd love to understand from your perspective, while we have you, the state of marketing in cannabis just seems inconsistent. Like, you know, and I know you've given me how, you know, we've just talked about how you're marketing, but maybe you can go into a little bit about the importance of a consistent brand in you know, today's state of affairs, the climate of this industry, you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID. You know, the inconsistencies for me are just, they're glaring. So I just wanted to kind of grab your opinion on that.
Yeah, you know, I think that we've seen such a volatile industry in the last 2 years, especially with the markets, with the vape crisis, with COVID. Like, it's just been a roller coaster ride. And I think the way you succeed through those times and through those moments is you got to know who you are, right? Because sometimes you're going to have $5 to spend. Sometimes you're going to have $5 million to spend. But knowing how to navigate that and knowing, you know, how to stay consistent and stay on message, whether you have five or 5 million, comes down to your brand ethos, comes down to your personality, your character, and your values. And I think a lot of folks, a lot of brands who don't do that well, and who kind of go with the tide as the tide moves, then you're not gonna break through with the consumer because you're not consistent, to your point. You're not, you know, hitting those same notes and delivering those same values every time. You know, when I first came into the business, a lot of folks wanted to do deals on the talent side because I just come from a very heavy talent business. You know, we signed the best athletes, the best musicians in the world. And for me, it was really important not to go sign those deals because we weren't sure who we were yet, you know, and we had to make sure we understood, like, what does Select stand for? Then let's go decide, let's go tell the world that, and then let's see who comes. Let's see who wants to be a part of the relentless pursuit of progress. Let's see who believes in that, rather than, oh, you know, this rapper wants a deal, or that artist wants a deal, and they want a product, they want their name on the box. And it's like, no, let's align on what we believe in, and then let's decide who fits that narrative. And if I have one more minute, I think the other side of that to me is, you know, I think about the cannabis industry, and it right now it still has this like asterisk next to it, right? It's still this sort of other industry, this other part of the industry. And as a marketer, it has this kind of, oh, that's the other category. And I've always believed really strongly that we're not here to bring culture and pull it into cannabis, right? We're not here to pay you all this money to put your name on our products. We're here to bring cannabis into culture. We're here to take it that way. You know, I always give the analogy, if you walked into a dinner party and, you know, there wasn't enough seats at the dinner table, well, what would your friends do? They all move over, right? And they grab a plate, somebody gives you a cup, somebody pours you some wine, and then you're having dinner with everybody, right? That's cannabis, right? And sitting at that table is apparel, is consumer electronics, is automotive, is footwear, is streetwear. And it's like, yo, cannabis just walked in. Make room, set it, give me a glass of wine, let's eat. You know, like we don't have to go eat in the other room. So that's what we're trying to do. That's what we believe in. I think there's other brands like Mario over at Stravinsky, like who are really playing in culture and really bringing cannabis into culture very authentically, very genuinely.
That's great, man. You have incredible insights, Jason. I'd love to kind of get what are your initiatives in social justice and social equity? Like Cureleaf and, you know, how you are taking those and running with them yourself.
Sure. So at the Select brand, you know, we were a part of launching a 501c3 called The Possible Plan. And The Possible Plan's mission statement is to change the narrative of cannabis. So really focus on those who were damaged by the war on drugs. There's really three pieces of that narrative. One is through they participate in expungement. The other is they participate in education and really sort of helping those outside of cannabis understand the narrative and why many of these communities of our Black and Brown brothers are in the situations they're in. And then lastly, actually fundraising and sort of trying to help provide funds to those groups that are doing the work, you know, that are really on the ground doing the work. Now, that was Possible Plan. That's what we built at Select. In at Cureleaf, as I've come on board in the last 4 months, there's just been an absolute commitment to building social equity and really making sure that in addition to diversity, inclusion, all the work we need to do there, how do we really make sure we can build a strong social equity program? We believe as being an industry leader, being the biggest, we have a role to play there. But for us, it's so important that we do it through business. And you know, this is not charity. This is about how we build a business model that allows many more people to partake and participate, but one that is a win-win for everybody. Because I think, you know, I always tell folks like, we have to grow. We have to continue to be a player in this space because our health drives the industry health. Like there's no denying that. And I think what we're looking to do, and we're talking to a lot of different partners, like how do we bring folks with us? How do we create win-win models? How do we do things like franchising? How do we do things like, you know, low interest loans, and how do we do things like executive management education and training? We're about to try a guinea pig program in Massachusetts. We're having conversations on the West Coast, and we're just trying to now figure out how do we do this the right way? Because I think while some have sort of run into the space or are scrambling because of what's happened in with George Floyd and what's happening in the world right now, we kind of said, guys, we've been on this path. We're going to take our time and get this right. And we're going to, you know, measure twice, cut once. And we're going to make sure we put this in the world the right way. And even if we have to take heat now for that, we know that we're building something meaningful and we're going to do it the right way.
Amen. Jason, you're so appreciated. Sorry, Jason Raznick, do you want to say one more thing here?
Yeah. I mean, before we hang up, there's another one I'm not going to get to. The stock, there's a question in the chairman about the stock. Do you follow the stock a lot, or you just execute and just let it be what it may, or anything? Like, I know you have earnings coming up in August, but do you, I mean, the symbol CURLF.
I mean, I have bosses and partners who are geniuses in this space. So on a personal level, they give me the freedom to not have to over worry about that and to build a long-term brand. really focus on how we're going to build this thing for the long haul. And, you know, those guys are wizards at making sure that we're listening to the street, listening to investors, and delivering on what we've committed to. So for me, it's really, it's not something I have to take in and day out. And I'm grateful for that flexibility, because my job is to think long term.
Yeah, I mean, and your company has done amazing. You guys have done amazing. And your initiative is just like, there's Curaleaf is just one of the great companies that'll be here for a long time. And I feel like it's still like this day one, like where there's so much stuff on the horizon. And I hope we get to see each other in person and this Corona thing goes away so we can really have fun eventually.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I tell my team all the time, if cannabis was a baseball game, we are still in the locker room putting our uniform on. That's where we are. You know, we have not even stepped into the dugout yet. So I think there's nothing but excitement to come, and it's a long, long journey. And again, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I look forward to meeting in person.
Yeah, thank you again.
It's been a pleasure, sir, and looking forward to definitely seeing you in person in the near future. Be well, my friend.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. So Elliot, that's one of the big players in the space. Jason's done an incredible job, and the wealth of experience that he's generated over the years. You just keep moving forward and you do things. You know, it's really easy to sit at home and do nothing. You keep moving forward and doing things. I could ask him questions for hours, to be honest.
No, like just listening to his perspective on the industry, both from a marketing and just a general human perspective, is so refreshing. It's been at one of the largest companies there is in the space, period, you know, globally.
Totally agree. So I know we're late, so let's get to the next one. Go ahead.
All right, next up, we have a good friend of Benzinga's, Brent Johnson, CEO of Hoban Law. One of the preeminent law firms in the cannabis industry. I'm very excited to hear Brent's insights, you know, how he got here, you know, what they're doing. We got the wonderful Brent Johnson on video. You might want to unmute yourself there, sir, and then we will hop into
it. Right. Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. I'm sequestered here in the mountains about 30 miles west of Denver, and safe and healthy. How are you guys?
Feel so sorry for you being sequestered in the mountains, man.
Someone's got to do it, right? Someone's got to do it.
I hear you. We're good, though. We're good. We're pushing through another hour with the Silver Fox himself, Jason Raznick. You are our only guest, not named Jason.
Yes.
But we're excited to have you. Brent, we'll hop right in, man. I know, you know, we're interested to hear how you got into cannabis law. You know, tell us about your journey.
Yeah, got you. So I'm a... Gosh, I was a Air Force Academy guy. I spent some time in the military. Got my law degree and my business degree. Started in Silicon Valley with my law career back in '99. Worked with startup companies, doing mergers, acquisitions, corporate securities work. I've been back in Denver since '03. Again, just working with law firms. Worked with a large franchise company. I've helped run small businesses. I've also helped run some large investment funds. We exited one fund and then set up another fund focused on cannabis. And that was about 4 years ago. So we started, I came into it more from, I was just fascinated about the industry and how it was growing. It was kind of history in the making. And so I kind of came in from an investment standpoint. And so I started looking at investments in the space and then connected with Bob Hoban. And Gajet at the time, I mean, he was certainly had one of the fastest growing law firms in the space. And so yeah, we connected, and so I definitely have made some investments in the space, and you know, it's great to be part of the Hoban Law Group. And you know, it's Bob's an amazing visionary and a force in the space, and you know, we're happy to be part of the space and moving it forward.
Yeah. So how long has Hoban? Could you give us maybe a little bit more of an overview into Hoban? What is your reach? Like, where do you guys practice? You're definitely all over the U.S., but I'm sure you have a global aspect as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So we call ourselves a full service business law firm. We just happen to be 100% committed to the cannabis space. So from general transactional work to corporate mergers, acquisitions, we structure investment funds, intellectual property, labor and employment, real estate, litigation. We don't do criminal defense or personal injury or anything. It's all about serving businesses and investors in the industry. We're over 50 attorneys now. We got about almost 30 states covered. We have a handful of folks that are partners with us down in Latin America. We have a few folks in Europe. We have a partner in Israel. We're trying to, it is a global play. And I will have to say that we probably are on the short list, probably the top three of the largest global 100% cannabis only law firms.
So can you, I mean, obviously you have perspectives from the entire cannabis economy, it sounds like, across the world. What's the state of cannabis? You know, I guess more specifically closer to home in the U.S., you know, can you give us maybe a few current trends that you're seeing in the cannabis industry and hemp and so on?
Yeah, so, you know, it's as we all know, cannabis has now been deemed essential, right? And so, I mean, that's certainly been a feather in our cap. Our clients are certainly benefiting from that. Most of our clients, certainly on the dispensary side, are seeing kind of, you know, record sales. So, you know, we see the marijuana side of the cannabis space continuing to grow, certainly as it expands into different states. You know, but we've been all in on hemp for you know, probably we were probably the first ones that kind of went all in on hemp. And we were probably 50-50. So about 50% of our clients are on the marijuana side, 50% are on the hemp side. Some plant touching, a lot of ancillary companies. But we're, you know, hemp's super exciting for us. I mean, you know, CBD right now is all the rage, but there, you know, the reality is that that's just one of the, you know, many, many cannabinoids that folks are looking into. I mean, there's, you know, CBN, CBG. So we're really trying to, you know, our clients that do CBD, we're trying to make them think broader in terms of other things the plant can do. And even more than that, I mean, arguably, you know, the plant has, you know, 30 to 50,000 industrial uses. And so really trying to teach our clients about the holistic view of the plant, right? I mean, you can squeeze the CBD out of it, but then what else are you going to do with it, right? I mean, you can make car doors and you can make clothes. I mean, there's so many things you can do with hemp.
Wait, so
go ahead. Right.
Let's talk about the car doors. So are you seeing hemp being replacing plastic in manufacturing right now?
It's the challenge is that the processing technology is still so novel, right? And so, yeah, I mean, we definitely see the, you know, hemp being used in a lot of materials long term. But right now, it's just even trying to, you know, cultivate and process hemp on a large scale, and then convert the plant into the various products. It's a technology play, really, building out the technology in larger scales when those products can be produced efficiently and profitably.
Yeah, I'm looking at that space as I think hemp has a lot more it can do. But like that part, you know, I'm looking at companies that can convert it in manufacturing where plastic was once used. I mean, you go to a restaurant, you see that you're not getting regular plastic straws anymore. Plastic is out. And so what's going to replace that plastic? Could it be more hemp, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, gosh, Bob Hubbin, we had a meeting yesterday and he had his hemp mask on. And so, I mean, there's so many things that people are using hemp for. And I mean, certainly, especially when you think of from a global standpoint, I mean, especially now that hemp is now fully legal in the U.S., it certainly opens up the doors for import and export, global business. You know, we focus a lot on supply chain. I mean, how our customers can move their products in and out of the U.S., including across state lines. But that's, you know, marijuana is marijuana, and folks use it for medicine or use it for comfort or enjoyment. But we look at hemp as, you know, it's certainly a multitude of opportunity on the hemp side versus the marijuana side.
And then we have a question in the chat. They Caesar wants to know, do you believe coronavirus, any comment about coronavirus accelerating U.S. federal cannabis legalization?
That's a tough one. I think, you know, part of it, we've seen folks come out and at least try to represent that CBD or some of these products can help that. You know, the issue with that is, you know, none of those claims are proven. There's no research there. And so I think that it would take a long time for us to do that research to understand whether or not CBD and hemp derived products, you know, can have effect on the virus. I actually just saw an article this morning. I think the University of Nebraska is going to start doing some studies, but you know, that takes time.
Okay. Question from the chat, or do you think, what about federal law and cannabis? Do you think that's gonna change soon or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, it's still, I mean, you know, it's obviously it's gonna depend a lot on how the politics play out over the next year or so. But you know, there's a lot of movement on hemp. And again, now that hemp's fully federally legal, you know, we're seeing a lot of movement on there. Lots of farmers are switching over to hemp. Lots of companies are learning how to process the plant and use it in various ways. On the marijuana side, it, you know, it's tough to say. You know, we probably don't see that happening anytime in the next, you know, probably three or four years.
I want to hop into the finance side, if that's okay with you, sure. Jason. I'm very interested because I feel like you do a lot of work, obviously, with companies in terms of deal trends, M&A, equity, debt, et cetera. I'd love to A, hear your thoughts on what you're seeing right now between those, and B, maybe go a little bit further into what investors are even looking for.
Yeah, so we're seeing, you know, there's general market trends, obviously, that I'm sure you've seen the stats. In general, we're seeing, even though a lot of folks think there's a lot of consolidation happening, we still see that kind of slow rolling. I think part of it, because I think a lot of the folks that are going to look to acquire companies, I still think they're holding out for a better deal. I think they don't think the bottom's happened yet. I've seen a number of deals kind of go on hold. I've seen a number of deals, the terms get kind of restructured. So I think we will see consolidation probably over the next 6 to 12 months, but right now things seem to be paused. And also folks that are going to acquire companies need capital. And so we're also seeing hesitation on the investor side to put money into deals like this. I'm working on a large $50 million investment fund, and they just put a pause on it for a month just because they're kind of waiting to see how things play out. There's a lot of investors that, you know, still kind of sitting on the sidelines. I think if you are an investor, looking for companies that have solid fundamentals, you know, companies that are structured properly. And if you're a company looking to raise capital, you know, the best thing you can do for yourselves is just make sure you have all your ducks in a row, from all your corporate organizational documents to, you know, strong financials to strong management team. You know, there are companies getting equity and debt capital, but it's the companies that are healthy and well structured and profitable.
That's awesome, Brent. Thank you for that information. So one thing that I'm super interested in hearing your expertise on are the psychedelic trends. Maybe a little bit of comparison to the cannabis space from your point of view.
Yes. Yeah, so it's definitely something that we're looking at, and, you know, you definitely see more content and articles come out about it, but it's at least 5 years behind where cannabis is. Right. And so, you know, cannabis is now commercial, you know, folks are, making it and selling it and actually making money. Psychedelics is still, it's at the very, very early phases. So we're definitely looking into it. We have clients that are interested, but, you know, it's at the early stages of legislation and getting the states to adopt. The commercial opportunity will come, but that could be a couple, 3 years down the road.
Well, are there any other activations you want to tell us about? Social justice, things you're doing on the social equity side, anything that you want to tell us about Hope and Law?
Yeah. So one thing, obviously there's been, lots of, challenges going on in the world these days. And we've always been committed to the space, from a legislation standpoint and policy and advocacy. And we've always done pro bono work. I think we've kind of doubled back and just made sure, is there anything else that we could do? And so even over the last month, we've been, revisiting our social justice plan, and we're working on a plan that will actually be released here in a couple of weeks. But anything from just making sure that we're promoting diversity, again, heightening our pro bono efforts. We've worked in the past very closely with the Minority Cannabis Business Association. We're large supporters of the Last Prisoner Project. And so we're really trying to see what we can do, more than just being a law firm and helping businesses and investors make money in the space, but have the higher cause that reflects the brand and reflects our commitment to the industry and its constituents.
Love that. Jason, do you have anything else for Brent right now?
Yes. So my question relies around, how do you stay abreast of all the new laws, different states? And when companies come to you and they want to open up or do something, is it like, hey, we don't really do this state? Or how does someone like you, who's so involved in the space, really stay to be the leader that you guys are, to know what is going on and everything? There's so much stuff that's so fluid in the space that I don't know. I just feel like there's so much noise that you have to read, and how do you know, decipher what's informed, what's not?
Well, and we've intently built out our team, again, over 50 attorneys. We've got almost 30 states covered. And so that's, a couple of things that really kind of set us apart. One is we're 100% cannabis. So we can do all the big deals, but we also have, we've been 100% cannabis for 8 years. And I don't think hardly any other firm could say that. But we have folks on boots on the ground in all the states that are active in cannabis. And so that's one of the benefits that we can bring to clients, is that if they come to us in Colorado and they want to go to California or Connecticut or New Jersey or Florida or Texas, we have folks in all those states. And so, that's how we keep abreast, is just having the folks that are on the ground. They understand the regulations and laws in those states. They understand what's happening in those states. And so we were able to advise clients across the country.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, because I mean, you're the biggest out there in having those many lawyers. It's like these companies that we just talked to CareLeaf, you know, 57 dispensaries, and you know, how do these companies scale? And they just can't go open a store. They need lawyers to do it. And I mean, we've worked with you guys for a while. You guys are great people to call. Do you have any things you want us to write about? Or
I think part of it, you know, appreciate all the accolades, and you know, we're super excited to be a leader in the space and thought leaders in the space and visionaries. I think just, you know, one note that I would make is that I think a lot of folks just see us as a regulatory shop. But you know, we can do deals up to, we've done deals as large as $100 million, both on the M&A side and the financing side. So if we can handle big deals, we have folks on the team from West Coast and East Coast law firms. And so there's really nothing that we can't handle.
Awesome. Brent, appreciate your time here, man. Your insights are incredible. You know, I think we'd love to continue this conversation if we could, but let's definitely reconnect for another. I think there's a lot more we could tap into at a later date, man, but appreciate you being on.
Yeah, Elliot, Jason, really appreciate it. And yeah, let's keep in touch, and I'm sure we'll circle back here soon.
Definitely.
Looking forward. Thanks, guys. Stay healthy.
Yep. Elliot, one of the things people already know are watching on the YouTube channel, we also have a link, BZ Cannabis Hour, CANNABIS Hour. On the right side, you can put your email address in or cell phone or both. And we won't text you a lot, but we'll just alert you to upcoming shows or upcoming events. So if you want to be alerted, again, go to cannabishour.com. On the right side, enter your email address and or cell phone. And then Morgan here will send you messages when we have an upcoming event, an email, so you don't miss it. I get a lot of people complaining to me that I don't let them know about stuff. So that's a way to prevent that.
The alerts that we send you are for the people you're hearing today, you know, for the CureLeafs, for the Hoban Laws, for the JW Assets. They're the ones that are speaking at these events. So, you know, I think if you're interested in Cannabis Hour, you're interested in the events for sure. So definitely sign up for that. All right, Jason.
All right.
It's strong, my friend. Who do we have here?
All right. We're going to finish strong. Another Jason, JWS, Jason Wild, big investor in the cannabis space, widely followed, got in early. Is he in the room? I don't even know. I see, but I'm excited to introduce Jason Wild. He's been to our events. Good guy, big following, and has made some, you know, prescient investments early. He was a pharmacist, saw what cannabis could do, and said, hey, I'm going to get in this space. And that's what he did. And he's here and he's cleaning up the room a little bit.
I didn't realize the camera just turned on this second. I didn't realize my whole messy bedroom was going to be showing. So I just moved the blanket out of the way.
All right.
Nice to see you guys.
You as well.
Nice to see you. How's life?
Life is good. I can't complain. You know, just been sheltering at home up here in Westchester.
Yeah,
you know, it could be worse. I could have to go, you know, I feel bad for these people who have to go work at the supermarket behind the cash register and stuff like that. We're all, you know, we're all pretty fortunate that we can do what we do from home.
Agreed. So just for people that may not be as familiar with your career trajectory, know you went to Wisconsin, know you became a pharmacist, but you got into cannabis investing early. Can you just give the cliff note version to some people that, you know, want to hear how you did that?
Sure. Yeah. So practiced pharmacy for 1 year. Was much more into the stock market than filling prescriptions. So I decided I opened up a fund in October 98 with $80,000 under management. And my view was just you know, if you build it, they will come. First 12 years, we did all public equities, got the fund to about 50 million in AUM. In 2010.
Hold on. How do you go from 80,000 to 50 million? Come on. A lot of guys. A guy reached out to me 2 years ago. He's starting a fund, and you know, I asked him yesterday how much is in the fund still. He's 60,000. So you know, like, how do you go from 80,000 to 4 million? I guess let's even go there.
I mean, it was a lot of it was through appreciation, and a lot of it was through bringing in new money. I mean, I've always run the fund more like a family office than like an asset management business that I'm just trying to gather as much assets as I can. So I've actually focused more on the investing side than the marketing side. But you know, when we're over that period of time, I think we're up like, you know, 25% a year net of fees. So that sort of doubles your money every 2 years just based upon compounding. And, you know, I would get a lot of people, my pitch, especially in the beginning when I had the small little fund, was, you know what, start with something small. You know, I'll let you put in 50 grand or 35 grand or whatever it is. Once you start getting your monthly statements and more comfortable with me and seeing the way we conduct our business, hopefully you'll add money or you'll refer a friend or a family member or something like that. Or at worst, I'll compound it over time and turn it into a bigger amount of money. So we did it. It was very sort of not too many large investors, lots of 100,000s and 200,000s and things like that. But we were able to sort of put it all together and grow it, you know, 20-something% a year.
And you got all the stuff together and made it like a hedge fund, I guess, right?
It was a real, yeah. I mean, it was a real fund. We had a real, PPM and limited partnership agreement. And we became, I forgot what year we had to become a registered investment advisor once you reach a certain threshold. And what happened, so those first 12 years where we, you know, like I said, we were from 80 grand to 50, those we only invested in public equities. And my real wheelhouse was pharmaceuticals. And within that, it was called specialty pharmaceutical companies, which were all the ones that were not the big cap guys like Merck and Pfizer and Abbott. And I love the companies that were doing M&A, either buying products or buying other companies and integrating them. And I was good at that, you know, if a company announced a deal, knowing, you know, which deals were good and which ones weren't. And then like towards say 2007 or 8, I ended up referring a few deals between companies. And one deal I referred ended up becoming like a grand slam. This company paid $10 million for this asset. They had a few things break their way. And over the next 6 years, they did like $200 million in profit on it. And I referred that deal. And what did I get? I got a pat on the back. So that put the idea in my head of, I want my fund, or like I look at it, my family office, I want my fund to own a drug company. So when I come across these assets, these potential M&A deals, I can refer them in-house and me and my investors could actually make money. So in 2010, we started a little company, or we bought a tiny little company called Arbor Pharmaceuticals, which really sort of, that took us to the next level. We bought this little company for $2.5 million, built it within a year. Our first full year we owned it was 2011. We ended up doing a company that had $55 million in pre-tax profit, grew it within 2 or 3 years to $100 million in profit. And then we sold part of it.
You bought it for $2.5 million and had $55 million in pre-tax profit. What am I missing?
No, we bought it for $2.5 million. It was losing money. We found a few M&A transactions to bring in some different assets over the following year. And those assets produced the $55 million in profit the next year.
When you bought those M&A assets, did you buy it through like the cash flow of the company you had, or you got like loans or like that, the first deal, I guess?
Yeah, the first deal, it was the first deal we got was we got the rights to a product, this $60 million product for angina or chest pain. We got the rights to it from this German company. It was like the best deal ever. It was doing $60 million in sales, like $35 or $30 million in profit. And they gave us the rights, and based on a profit split, we got to keep 25% of the profits, which was like 10 or 11 million a year. And they got to keep the other 75%. So that was an amazing deal.
So they wanted you to go sell.
And then the next deal we got, we bought an asset for $30 million from Abbott Labs. And that one, my fund invested more in the equity. We did it like half equity and half debt.
Got it.
But all in, you know, Arbor, not to spend too much time talking about Arbor, but Arbor since 2010 has done about $800 million in pre-tax profit. And the only money, the only primary equity that ever went into it, or in terms of dollars, it's only at $20 million that have gone into the company in equity. The rest we've been able to fund with debt and cash flow.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the thing that I was even going to say even crazier is that one deal, that home run that you referred, you got a pat in the back, it's $250 million. Imagine if that was a part of Arbor and you had your thing set up. I mean, we have those stories. But so going to today, and we're going to get to TerrAscend in a little bit, but where you've been investing in the cannabis space, and we can talk about some of those and feel free to drop some in, but where do you think we are today? How are these companies going to raise money? Who are the winners? Is it the vertical integrators, the producers, the dispensaries, the branding? What does the Jason Wild crystal ball say?
Yes. So at this point going forward, my view is the way to make money is A, to be in the U.S. You know, whereas in 2014, all the way through 18, we were only really invested in Canada because, you know, A, I was worried about getting arrested. B, B, I my thought was that if that was the only place that I was comfortable investing because it was totally legal, then it was, I felt like it was going to get the most appreciation because it was also going to be the only place that other people were interested in investing. That was my thesis till 18. But starting in around the middle of 18, I realized that like the US was where it is. The US is the best industry, is the best you know, sort of driver of profits or revenues in practically every industry. And that's definitely the case in cannabis too. And then, you know, John Boehner going on the board of Acreage sort of flipped the switch in my head where I said, they're not going to start arresting, you know, arresting people because, you know, now there's some pretty rich and powerful people that are involved. And that was when we started, started looking at U.S. opportunities, but I had not made a U.S. investment, you know, for the first four or so years. From then going forward, my view has been, it's all about the U.S. I'm really not bullish at all on Canada or the rest of the world. The U.S. is this amazing opportunity with huge with you know huge markets that are just sort of available right now. In terms of the companies I want to be invested in, it depends. It's really you know sort of what's the real estate saying? Every market is local. I think Jason was on earlier. I heard him. He said something similar. But it really it depends on the market. What's the by far the most attractive sort of area to be invested in right now to me is the limited license states on the East Coast. In my view, that's where the majority of the profits are being made. You know, the West Coast is okay. I mean, obviously California is a very large market with a lot of revenue in it, but it's competitive. I mean, it's not really, it's not a limited license state. So there's, you know, thousands and thousands of licenses. You know, we have invested, we've invested in the past in California and have some investments there. And my view is there, I want, because it's a competitive market, I'd like to be geared more towards being in retail, because even if they can grant unlimited licenses for cultivation and you know products and brands and things like that, there's only so many dispensaries that a local jurisdiction will allow. So I feel like that builds a little bit of a moat around that business in these more competitive markets. But you know, my view is, like I said, on the East Coast, you pretty much you have to be vertically integrated. And that's awesome. That's very attractive to us on the fund side, and also on the TerrAscend side, because that's where you can make some really you can make some really good margins. And on the East Coast, part of being successful is there's so much demand and not enough supply right now. That part of like what makes you successful is sort of just going big early and having scale. Whereas you know that's not the case in California. A lot of these more competitive, more mature you know states further west.
I mean, that's really interesting, the difference between the regions and the geographies. So, and to kind of reference what one of our past guests said, you know, that some investors are waiting for it to bottom out before they really start jumping back in. Is that going to happen anytime soon? Is it going to happen at all? You know, what I know we have some momentum right now in cannabis, but where when's it going to maybe start looking a little bit like early 2019, late 2018, even before that?
Yeah, yeah, I would be happy to have it be like that as well. I think that there's a lot of good assets out there. I mean, I think you know the stock market has not been kind to the vast majority of cannabis stocks, even the ones that are executing or you know way off of their highs. It's just a matter of being off less than the ones that are really in trouble. I think that that whole environment, as much as I've it's not been all that much fun, and you know every company that I have come in to visit me, often it's like a therapy session and trying to cheer them up or help them, you know, figure out what to do or something like that. Because, you know, there's obviously the capital markets have sort of close to frozen up over the last several months. That being said, it's really, it's been really helpful to the companies that are better financed and that not only that are real operators, because that's what the last year has really exposed. It's moved away from the let's plant the flag in every state that we can plant it in to now the market is much you know more geared towards and appreciative of companies that are deep and not wide. And if you're deep and you're only in a few states as opposed to being in 20, it's so much easier to compete, right? I mean, how can a company that's in 20 states, how can they possibly compete with a company that's in one state or in two states, if there's good operators in there, they're doing that. So So I think that, you know, that sort of, you know, it's, I over the last, you know, 6 months or so, you know, the opportunities we're seeing are amazing in terms of being able to see these amazing assets where all of a sudden the companies are just insolvent, but they've actually, the shame of it for them is that they've actually gotten to the point now where they've gotten their facilities built and they have sales and they have some cash flow, not enough to solve their funding gaps. But at this point, it's almost like they had to, like, you know, they got to the 1 yard line and now they had to punt or give up the ball on downs or something like that. So there's these amazing opportunities. At the same time, you know, in my fund, I would like it if the sector acted, had a better tone to it and the stocks, you know, were able to go up with all these other, you know, FANG stocks and all of that. So I sort of have looked at it. I don't know if you guys remember the scene. I think it was Rocky I or Rocky II where, who is it? Apollo is like killing Rocky. And he's like, you know, they're about to throw in the towel and he's getting, he's like taking a ton of punches. And then all of a sudden, like each punch is making him stronger. And then all of a sudden he turns it around and starts beating Apollo. And that's sort of what I felt like for the last 6 months or so in terms of the sector's horrible. You know, you look at the screen, there's a lot of red, but there are these amazing opportunities that are going to make us come out so much stronger on the other side because it shook out, so, you know, so many people in the space that weren't real.
Yeah, I love that analogy, though. I remember that scene when Rocky's getting hit and he falls back to the ropes and he's come on, give me again, hits his chin, hit me again. Then just
that all you got? Something like that, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm going to switch this a little bit. You know, TerrAscend, I want to talk to a little bit. So Pennsylvania, you know, Pennsylvania going to wreck and its impact on TerrAscend. First go with that, and then I have one or two follow-ups to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So just for the people that don't know the connection.
Tell me.
Back at the end of 17, I realized that I wanted to do like a Arbor 2.0, the drug company, you know, that we started in 2010, because the first 12 years in investing, I only invested in non-control positions in pharmaceutical companies. I learned the space, I built the network, I made some money. And then with Arbor, my goal was to bring all that to bear and something I could have more control over as the lead investment and the chairman. You know, obviously that worked out beyond my wildest dreams. My thought was, wow, the same first part just happened in cannabis. This was at the end of 17. I've been investing in it for 3 or 4 years, made some money, built a network, you know, learned the space. But then my thought was, I need to do step two, which is even sort of when you're investing in a private company and it works, the returns can be, you know, so much more explosive than making a 3 or 4x, you know, which would be a home run in a public stock. So that was my idea. I was talking to, at the time, the CEO of Canopy Growth, Bruce Linton, about it, and his eyes lit up and said, you should definitely do it and we want to be involved. So there was a company called TerrAscend that was public already in Canada. They had their license and a facility in Toronto. This was January 17, I had put 250 grand into in January of 17. In November of 17, when I made this decision that I wanted to have a company to sort of do like an Arbor 2.0, I went back to them. They had at the time a $40 or $50 million market cap. I convinced them to take a $52 million private placement, which was obviously very large relative to the value of the company. I let Canopy Growth and Canopy Rivers co-invest in that deal with me. So I did 60% of it for my fund, and Canopy Rivers and Canopy Growth did 20% each. So that was the end of 17. I think, like I mentioned, for the first, all the way to the middle of 18, it was only Canada. We weren't looking at anything in the US. Then we decided to, I decided overall for my fund and for TerrAscend that we needed to pivot to the US. And we started, TerrAscend started looking at a bunch of deals. And at this point, TerrAscend is in California, where we own the Apothecarium, which is, like a high market share dispensary chain in the San Francisco area. Beautiful aesthetic, you know, considered, you know, sort of a high-end dispensary. And then in Pennsylvania, we own the number one cultivator and manufacturer, I believe, as of right now in Pennsylvania. We think we own 25% of the wholesale market in Pennsylvania. And as I'm sure you guys have heard, Pennsylvania has been a hot state. It's a state that's medical, that will probably, as you just mentioned, will probably go wreck. There's been a lot of stories in the papers just in the last couple of days about how you know, the state, the Republicans in the state are talking about doing it to fill the budget gaps there, which is going to happen in a lot of other states as well. But Pennsylvania is a great state right now. It's like an $800 or $900 million at retail state. You know, that's the run rate. It's about half of that at wholesale. And like I mentioned, you know, where we think we have 20 to 25% of that market. I think that you know, if Pennsylvania goes rec, it could be more like a $2.5 to $3 billion market versus $800 to $900 million right now. So we're super excited about that. That was an acquisition that we made last September, but they just brought on the tripling of their cultivation and output just in the last 3 or 4 months, and it's all come on, and the market is fully absorbing it. You know, and you know, the market is still a little bit undersupplied. So that's Pennsylvania, which now more recently sort of as an outcome of COVID, people are talking about rec. But what we were more excited about for rec up until the last few weeks was we won a license in New Jersey. We applied for that one ourselves. We came in like number one or number two out of 145 applicants. So they gave us the North region of Jersey. Jersey, just to compare it to Pennsylvania, Jersey only has 11 dispensaries in the whole state. And it's gonna be on the ballot for rec, you know, in November, which means it'll go into effect sometime in the first or second quarter of next year. It's got 11 dispensaries for a state of 9-ish million people. Pennsylvania has 12 million, so a little bit bigger, but it's got, you know, 85 dispensaries going to 150, and it's not rec. So we actually, whereas Ilera, our operation in Pennsylvania, the majority of our revenues are on the wholesale side. We do own 3 dispensaries there as well, but the majority of our business on the wholesale side. We think in New Jersey, the majority of our business could be on the retail side, because when rec goes into effect, there's no way there's going to be more than like 20 dispensaries for the whole state. So we could be talking about dispensaries that are doing, you know, $35+ million in revenue per dispensary versus, you know, sort of like, as an example, the Apothecarium in San Francisco, those are like somewhere around 12 million a year in revenue.
Wow.
So we're excited. You know, that's part of my, you know, real excitement about the East Coast, you know, and we're, you know, Pennsylvania's a great state. Jersey's awesome. And what I like it about it, you know, a lot of people, you know, ask which states, you know, we think are interesting as a, you know, sort of a next place to move into. What's awesome about Pennsylvania and Jersey is compared to state, you know, Massachusetts, there's a lot of, you know, revenue and money being made. Illinois is, you know, super hot right now, but those states, they've already gone rec. Like, it's great when you're in a state that's, you know, that's a great market like Pennsylvania, and you're making money, and then you have that extra gear for when it does go rec. So that's those are the kind of, you know, those are kind of states that we're looking at in addition.
Go ahead. What were you gonna say?
Oh no, Jason, finish it up.
I was gonna say you have a ton of stuff on your plate here with these opportunities, and a lot of it's government regulated. If they're gonna make rec or what have you, but you guys are positioned well. Will you ever take TerrAscend public?
No, TerrAscend is public.
So then I'm an idiot. So what's what's the symbol?
Symbol is on the in the U.S. it's TRSSF, and in Canada on the CSC it's TER.
So so TerrAscend is public. We got on the U.S. $161 million market cap.
It's symbol. More than that. Are you looking on Bloomberg or something? For some reason, yeah, you know, it doesn't get the share count right because of these. There's these multi-voting shares that a lot of these companies have to have, where they have a lot of U.S. owners. So the real market cap is more like 450-ish U.S. But we did just so I can point out, we reported a few weeks ago. We reported the first quarter. We broke into profitability. We did the company did $35 million in sales and $5 million in EBITDA. That was up from $25 million and a $5 million loss in the prior quarter. And we gave guidance on the call, or the CEO did, for another 30% growth from Q1 to Q2 with improving margins. So we flipped that switch towards being profitable. As I mentioned, I think, you know, the capital markets only want to reward right now companies that can really like sort of eat while they dream, meaning making money and being able to sustain themselves over the long term, and not to, you know, just be completely dependent upon the capital markets. And we think that we've, you know, everything is really coming into place there. We've also, we hired in the last 2 months, the former founder and CEO of Fresh Direct. And he's been amazing, because as you guys know, cannabis business is hard because there's so many extra hoops you need to jump through and, you know, just a million different things going on. It's hard when you bring people in from other industries. Sometimes they just can't keep up. And I look at Fresh Direct in terms of, you know, I think even pre-COVID, they were doing 500,000 deliveries per month, mostly in New York City, where they were getting, you know, parking tickets in the front of the building and, you know, picking and packing thousands of items a day and preparing thousands of meals. I felt like that was a business that was even more complicated than the cannabis business. And, you know, Jason Ackerman, the CEO, he's been with us now for a few months. He loves it. And he says to me, like, this is not, he's like, it's a lot of work, but this is nothing compared to what I was doing. So,
I saw that. And you guys, you also did a private placement capital raise. So Terrace then should be well capitalized and profitable. I think it was May 28th when you announced revenue and earnings. And if you're announcing an increase, I mean, you shouldn't have to depend on the capital markets in this case if you're, growing and profitable. So that is, and then the Canadian, what was the symbol on the Canadian?
TER.
TR. So here T-E-R. So I'm getting in the chat room. The symbol here is TRSSF. TRSSF. Yeah. Now, when you do a private placement, so say you bought shares in it and you're an insider, will it show in the public markets on the U.S. market on the OTC stuff or no? Do you know?
It depends. It's a good question. It goes back to the reason that the share count doesn't look right there is because U.S. investors, in order to not trip certain tax rules about, you know, because TerrAscend is considered a Canadian domiciled company. If you have over 50% of your shares that are out are held by U.S. Shareholders, then there's just a lot of extra hoops that you have to jump through. That's why the majority of the MSOs that are listed up there have what's called these proportional voting shares or multi-voting shares.
Got it. Okay.
Which ends up, it's a workaround. But the problem is, for that reason, it ends up those. That's what we bought in this last financing, or the last financing actually was like a preferred. It won't necessarily show up as an insider buy, other than the fact that, you know, and I'm happy to point it out. Out of the $37 million that the company raised,
you were 20 million.
We did 20 million of it, but it doesn't necessarily come across the tape as an insider buy. It comes across in the press releases.
No, I got it. It makes sense. So it's a good story. We should watch this one, guys, and maybe you should come on one of our stock trading shows. But this is, I mean, we're over the time. This has been great. Jason, thanks for coming on. We should do this more often. You're a wealth of information, and we can't do it physically in person. So let's, you know, keep chatting and update us on TerrAscend or any other new opportunities or deals you're looking for. We do have a lot of companies pitching us, and it sounds like a trait that you have is you're good at finding these opportunities that haven't been fully formed, like that sales deal you did way back when with Arbor, that company that was profitable, and then these other deals. So that's, you have that strength. So we have companies that are pitching us all the time, and maybe you should look at some of those too down the road.
Send them my way. Absolutely.
I will. Elliot, do you hear that?
I will. That's what I do all day, Jason. We'll have to talk at some point, Mr. Wild. Appreciate you being here, man.
All right. Yeah, Thank you, Jason.
Here. It was fun.
And Jason Hode says, go Badgers.
Go Badgers. All right. Peace. Somebody said hi. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right. I think we are done. I'm not sure if I'm off or not, but... Thanks, Rasmik. Are you coming back, or we lost the Silver Fox?
Me out. I'm here again. They kicked me out. Something was going on. But all right, we went over. We're at 3:03:15. Remember, go to BZ Cannabis Hour to sign up for email alerts and texts. You can get this as a podcast, or you know, anything you listen to. You should definitely listen. We had a great show today, Elliot, with Jason White from Curaleaf, Brett Johnson from Holman Law, Jason Wild from JW Funds. These are the big names. If you're looking for money, you got it here. If you're looking for distribution, looking for partnerships, you got it here. If you're looking for legal help, you got it here. That's what we bring, and we make them make people accessible. If there's people that you want us to bring on in the future, please send us an email to events@benzinga.com. And Elliot, it's been fun co-hosting with you. I told you we needed to fight about something, though, and we got to figure that out next time.
You're just too lovable. I don't know.
Tell my wife that, because I don't think she thinks that. Shelby Jones thinks that either. So I just had to say that. Anyway, that was it.
You're lucky we're not in the office, or Shelby would throw something at you.
Exactly.
But Hey, everybody, check out our deal room July 22nd. Check out our Michigan Cannabis Capital Conference August 18th. You'll see more incredible thought leaders in the space as well. And of course, every Thursday at 2 p.m. right back here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, Elliot. It's been good calls with you, and I'll talk to you offline.
See you guys. Have a good one. Thank you all.
Mama is treating me to breakfast.
Yep, let me see your phone.
Huh?
Look here. I download this McDonald's app because when you buy any bagel sandwich like the steak, egg, and cheese bagel, you get one free.
Wait, you just bought that on my phone.
That's right. Now that you got McDonald's money, you could treat Mama.
Okay, Ma, you got it.
Valid for product of equal or lesser value. Valid through 10/2/22 at participating McDonald's. Valid one time per day. App download and registration required.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.